Good morning and welcome to the Preventing Grace podcast for March 23rd, 2020. We've done a whole week of self-isolation.
Yeah.
This has been really great.
The kids are better. The fever's broke.
Yeah.
So thank you for praying. Never prayed. Thank you.
Yeah.
It was really scary. That was that breath. I mean, their heads were just burning up and their breath or their chest thing was the scariest thing. But it seems to be over.
Yeah. So. Emma had a relapse. Like, I don't know if that's what it was, but hers went on longer and then her. And she had whooping cough a long time ago. So she compares everything to that. So I think the breath stuff kind of, and the cough scared her.
She said it felt like whooping cough. Just the inability to draw in air.
But that's because she compares
everything to whooping cough.
But
that's what they say. I mean, I was reading the description of how it feels.
It feels like that.
Yeah. So.
So.
I don't know. We didn't get tested because the doctor said not to go in, but because.
Well, there aren't tests.
Yeah, there weren't tests apparently. And so we didn't want to, and he didn't want to infect anybody who was in the waiting room. So we don't know for sure they had it, but all the symptoms seem to be lined up.
So far, no one else has had it, but if somebody does get it, then that resets the clock.
Right.
We have to start counting days again.
The weird thing is a 15-day or a 14-day gestation period, possibly. So you can have it and just spread it around without knowing you have it, and then you get it.
Right.
It's just...
Which is stressful because my parents are now back in the country. Mm-hmm. They went through Manhattan, the epicenter, all the way from Mali to Istanbul to JFK. Now they're in quarantine in Delaware. So, and I thought it was really interesting because Mali developed really, really good Ebola protocols way back in the day. And they enacted those early on. When my parents went to Mali in February, before anybody really thought this was a big deal, they had their temperatures taken as they came off the plane by people in hazmat suits. And they had their hands Cloroxed and or disinfected. That was like a month ago or over a month ago. When they came into JFK, guess what the American government did for them? Or the New York State.
They just passed them through the border, right?
They just came into the country like nothing. No temperature. No,
New York doesn't have a problem with it right now, right?
Yeah. So I was really stressed when they were traveling through New York City on Saturday. Was it Saturday? Mm-hmm. And now I'm going to be really stressed for the next 2 weeks waiting to find out what happens. We all can just sit here in our house stewing in total horrifying stress. Sounds like fun, doesn't it?
Yeah.
That's the subject of our podcast this week.
Well, you know, I know there's a lot of people who are just upset that the church is capitulating and closing. And can't it's not necessarily our church, but churches in general. Rusty Reno wrote that piece last week that I responded to, and
I know we both blogged about it.
I just can't. What makes me, what seems sort of irrational to me is that yes, the church proclaims that we need not fear death because Christ is risen from the dead and trample death under his feet. So we are not subject to death. We don't have to worry about what's going to happen to us after we die. But, it's not really just about me or as an individual or you as an individual. There are also people who we could kill by being around them. So it's not a question of whether or not the church is compromising the gospel when you decide not to meet so that you don't pass on a deadly infection to your weakest members. It's a necessary thing. And
it seems like the pro-life option to me.
Yeah. I, And if it turns out, you know, I understand people say, well, it's all being hyped. It's not that big of a deal. Well, okay, let's say it's all being hyped. And we find that out after 2 months. It's not that big of a deal. I don't think that's what's going to happen. Let's just say we do. Still, I don't want to, I'm not going to take the risk. I'm not going to decide, oh, it's all a big media hoax. So let's endanger our old people and put them in harm's way. I that would be the most irresponsible thing a leader could do.
Yeah. I mean, we wouldn't do that if it was particularly prone towards children. Like, what if children contracted this easily? We would really circumscribe our behavior in order to protect children. So it seems like it's fair to do that for people who are immunocompromised and in high risk categories. I don't know. I just read this morning that in Italy, if you're over 60, you don't get a ventilator. Like, they just don't have them. They've made that determination. It's by age. If you're over 60, they can't help you.
James White was saying, you know, this is...
That's like...
Here really we see shocking. The contradiction and the tension in the secular atheist mindset, because this is a disease that's basically right up the Darwinist alley. I mean, it what does it do? It destroys the weak and the old. And so the secular atheist should think, well, this is a good thing. This will increase the health of our gene pool to let it run rampant. But they can't. They don't. Even the most hardened Darwinist atheist doesn't want this thing to continue, which tells us that and the reason for that is that implicitly he knows that life is valuable, even old life, even weak life, and he doesn't want. There's this kind of tension with what he knows to be true, and he's suppressing by his adoption of secular mores and norms, those norms. What he believes at other times, when death isn't staring
him in the face.
Right.
It's interesting because there are people online who are like, let all the old people die. Like, this will be great. We'll get rid of all the boomers.
Oh, just, right. Yeah.
Yeah. But those people are really, that's not.
Are they joking or are they?
I don't, doesn't seem like a joke, but it's hard to tell what's really funny anymore. So yeah, I mean, I do think there are some people who are so committed to atheism that they do go ahead and follow it to its logical conclusions, but that isn't most people. Most people are like, what can we do? How can we stop it?
I guess the thing that makes me the most irritated, I guess, is not, I understand, but irritated are people who get mad that the church, not just our church, but the church worldwide is not meeting for maybe 2-3 months. Who knows how long it's going to be. I understand that, but just to immediately decide that the church is surrendering.
A surrender monkey.
A surrender monkey. Yeah. That's the kind of thing you say when you don't have the personal responsibility of taking care of yourself. And so you can kind of sit back and take pot shots at.
Yeah. Okay. Well, people are stressed. I was really, really unhappy not going to church yesterday. I was surprised by how unhappy I was. Like, I didn't think it would be that big of a deal. And then as I was stuck in my house all day, I couldn't stop crying. I kept trying to make jokes. I made pancakes, which I never do, on Sunday morning, and tried to make it a cheerful thing, but I was like standing weeping over the pancakes, and the kids were like, oh my gosh. But they were really unhappy too. They just couldn't. It was really interesting to me. Like, our whole lives are oriented around this one day that we go to church. And so not to go, it feels like a catastrophe. And I didn't expect that. Which is interesting. I mean, I think I worry if we don't meet for 2 or 3 months, like, oh my gosh, it's going to be all, nobody will come back. But honestly, I don't think that that's going to I think people who didn't really want to go anyway might not come back. But people who, a goodly number of people, Christians, order their lives around the meeting of the church. And so not to meet is almost physically painful.
Well, I hope what it will do is it will increase the desire to be together rather than decrease it. And that people get, the lack of it will reignite the passion for being at church. The other side of it, the bad side of it, it could lead people to be so comfortable watching that they don't care. So I'm just hoping for the first, not the second.
Right.
The other thing that could happen is, you know, there are some really high powered, very wealthy churches out there who can afford to put out a supremely good feed on Sunday morning. And, you know, the other worry is that people who go to poorer churches with less money are going to start being drawn to these bigger ones and leave, you know, stop giving to their.
There's some churches.
So, I mean, I would say, you know, if you go to, watch your church's feed and contribute to your church. Yesterday we pulled in $400.
Oh gosh.
In PayPal. I'm not sure how much we got in Breeze, but on a regular Sunday, we pull in at least, $5,000, $6,000. So this is going to hit us hard if this continues. So, and I can't imagine what it's, and we're fairly well off.
Yeah.
We have a big surplus, but it's going to, that's going to dwindle really fast if we don't get giving. And the same thing is true for, I can't imagine how smaller churches that are more on the edge are going to make it through this without laying off people, without.
Because it increases the already sense of it being a marketplace. We've already trended in sort of American Christianity towards the consumer, drifted towards consumerism in church. And towards an expression of Christianity, and this, because of that overall drift, could be the nail in the proverbial coffin, which is a horrible image right now. Or it could be a really good wake-up call. I don't know. It could go either way. But that's really a terrifying proposition. I mean, we struggled through our feed yesterday.
It was okay. Last Monday we said, okay, we're gonna buy a good camera. We got some recommendations for the camera to get and the adapter to get and all that stuff. And well, we ordered it. Things came in on Thursday, but we didn't have the right adapter, so we couldn't do we tried to work around, didn't work, so we had to wait till Saturday to finally get all the equipment we needed. And then, there were some bugs that when you put new equipment in
an old system,
there's going to be some bugs you have to work out. And so hopefully by next week it'll be smoother, but it was, there's a lot of choppiness and lagging, and our music director did a supreme.
He's like Jesus himself.
He did a great job. He gave up so much hours, so much time this week. And
doing music, he did tech, but then he also did music.
Yeah.
It's really.
Yeah. So, I think you gotta. So if you go to a church, I know people are losing money too. So it's not just a matter of
people
not giving. I mean, it's also,
if you've lost your job, you can't give to your church. Right.
Right. So, this is going to be, the economy of this is going to be bad for everybody, not just churches. But if you can give to your church, give to your church, support the live stream, whatever. Excuse me. If we had a mute button, I should have pushed the mute button. I didn't do it.
No, because we don't know how to unmute it once we muted it.
Sorry, excuse me. Support your church's live stream. People were saying, how do you preach to an empty?
You just look at the camera.
You look at the camera, and I could see on my pad that we were having viewers. So if I see that, I know I'm not just talking to an empty.
It encourages you to keep going.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I was so anxious during that while you were doing the service. I got to watch it again with a more calm spirit or something. Yeah.
What were you anxious about?
I don't know. It's just like, I felt this tidal wave of horror. It felt to me like, as the day went on, I thought, I relived the Sunday that we lost our lawsuit and we worshiped in the really nice Baptist gym. The Baptists were really, really kind and Christian, and so were the Catholics. But I rage cut my hair. Like, we moved out of our house on a Thursday, and between Thursday and Sunday, I went and got like a severe haircut. And the kids were all crying. Like, nobody, we were just in total chaos. That Sunday morning, I got out, I pulled up next to a big snowbank and tried to get the kids out of the car. And we all fell in the snow, and I hurt myself. And I was just weeping and angry and helpless. And I felt like that all day yesterday. So I need to see a therapist, probably as a result of the coronavirus. But it's, I mean, if you, again, if you're, okay, I can't imagine being a person in this who is self-isolating without a community of not just a good, like, group of friends or family, but a community of Christian believers. Like, the strength of the Christian body through prayer across time and space is so essential. And if you don't have that, where you really know people for real, right. I don't know how you're going to get through an 18-month, you know, isolation time. You should find a church right now somehow. I don't know how you're going to do it. I don't know how God is going to organize this. How are we going to, you know, reach the lost when we're not allowed to talk to people face to face? You got to private message me if you want to know about Jesus.
Well, no, I mean, I think, well, I, in that sense, I think the live feeds that everyone is doing might be helpful. I mean, what are people going to do during an isolation time? They're going to go online and they can hear the gospel. If they're, I mean, it's just scrolling through Facebook yesterday. I mean, feed after feed after feed. And now not everyone has Christian friends, but someone, I mean, there's enough Christians out there on Facebook.
You should share
sharing your church's, their church's threads, that somebody's gonna, who doesn't believe, is gonna have it
and watch it. Right. Should watch it. And then
so I don't think evangelism will take a hit. I think it's probably gonna be more people hearing about it than hearing the gospel than would have otherwise.
Maybe. But, one can always hope. Yeah, my Twitter feed this morning wasn't particularly Christian. So,
well, we're I think most churches are doing this. But so, John and Tyler, my two assistants, and me, we've divided up the roles in the church. We're calling everybody every week just to see if anyone's sick or if anyone's
needing anything.
Yeah.
So healthy people can go and help people who are really not able to.
Right.
We have a certain number of healthcare workers too, health professionals. I don't know what the correct term is, and they are gearing up for battle.
Yeah.
This week, I noticed that. What we should give some kind of advice, having never lived through this before. We should have, like, I don't know, 6 ways to survive the next 6 months. Something awful. No, I have no idea. I wouldn't dream to. I would not want to give anyone any advice right now.
No.
Although I did a like, you shouldn't cut your hair if you've never done that before.
Who said that?
A lot of people online. Like, if you've never cut your hair and you're bored, don't do it right now, because you will have to come outside sometime.
Yeah.
And there's not enough time for it to grow back. I'm sort of addicted to, like, trimming my own hair, so it may be bad.
But you did. You do a good job of that. You cut everyone else's hair.
I cut everyone else's hair. What's your... What? Surely you have some, like, deeper thought.
About cutting hair?
No. How to survive the next 6 months.
Oh. No, I don't. I have no deeper. I mean, okay, so on one level, I don't think our life is totally changing, because we stay home most of the time anyway. I work from home mostly, and so do you. So it's not as big a dramatic shift as other people. I think actually we're going to have more work.
Yeah.
Because the communication aspect of our job,
it's just gotten really
much
harder.
More intense. Well, yeah. I'm making calls I didn't have to make before.
Yeah.
Because I saw people on Sunday morning every Sunday. Yeah. You know, one of the functions of Sunday morning is you see people and you can kind of check in. Mm-hmm. Or you're checking in.
Oh, I know. I have like a big long list and I can't. Yeah. My communication life is really intensified. Mm-hmm.
And a lot hinges on technology now. I mean, so I'm just making sure I get. On Tuesday morning, I would podcast, or I would send out my Tuesday morning Bible study on Facebook. And, you know, the sound quality wasn't great because it's just an iPhone speaker and an iPhone picture. But, and I just, you know, who cares, because people are going to come in on Sunday and they don't need, I mean, not a lot hinged on whether or not people could hear me well on the Tuesday morning Bible study.
Right.
But now, that Bible study, Thursday Bible study, Friday Bible study, Christian education, things hinge on it. So I've got to get good.
You have to have good audio.
Yeah, yeah. Because no one wants to listen if they can't.
Right. If it's so frustrating,
yeah.
Then you're not going to, you can't endure it.
Right.
That, and I feel like I don't love the idea of just letting my entire Sunday school year absolutely fall to the ground. So I really want to think creatively about how to have Christian education for children, which is a big part of our church. So, right. I mean, I think everybody can maybe figure it out on their own, but we have such a nice program, catechesis, that I need to think about that this week. But I don't know how to do that. The tech part doesn't interest me at all. So it's hard for me to care.
But you have to, because you have to.
Yeah, but I really need to. I've been baking like psychotically, so I need to stop doing that. I baked so much this week. I just cleaned and baked because I was stressed. And I can't do that for whatever, however many months. I got to stop. Like, we have to start eating normally. We can't just eat big piles of bread, which is what I did. I just made bread and cake. I didn't make cake, but I made pie, cinnamon rolls. So we have to kind of go back to our regular life instead of feeling like this is abnormal. It just has to feel normal somehow. So
I need to get to learn how to cure meat. To preserve it. So we have a whole bunch of meat. I mean, we went and we really splurged on groceries on Monday because we were worried about, we didn't know it was going to shut down. We didn't know grocery store is going to be only delivery. What's going to happen? How's that going to work? But
so are you going to try to cure our meat? We don't have enough salt for that.
Know. Yeah, I know.
You should learn how to make ham. Like, we should get a little pig. In our garden.
The big idea, okay, also we should talk about this, is that, you know, what do we do for communion for people?
I mean, I know, that was really stressful. We all watched you take communion yesterday.
Yeah.
And so I thought...
There is such thing as spiritual communion. I'm not sure if you...
Yeah, I mean, I've read about it and stuff. I just think we should do morning prayer.
You seem so skeptical.
Yeah, I think we should do morning prayer. That our church has a service for such a time as this. And we should do that.
I think it would be better to go keep doing the normal thing we always do to help people keep the sense that the church is going on normally.
Yeah, but it's really strange to watch you up there and then, like, you eat the bread and drink the wine and then it's all over. And
well, it wasn't just me.
Staring at the
you
screen.
Know, Michael and John had communion too. It was just in a table far away from me. But there's, okay, spiritual communion. That's
okay, yeah. So explain it to me, because I'm really not sold.
It doesn't matter whether you're sold, sweetie. It's the truth. In John chapter 6, which was a full year, maybe year and a half, before Jesus instituted the sacrament of his body and blood, he says to people, a huge crowd, unless you feed on me, you're going to die. I am the bread of life. Eat my flesh, drink my blood. Now, of course, Jesus knows that in a year he's going to institute the sacrament, and he's going to add the elements of bread and wine to that feeding. But he was telling those people right then to trust in him and feed on him by faith and to eat his flesh and drink his blood, which means that is something that they could do right then, even without the elements. And so I think the 11 at least did. They were already feeding on him by faith. That's what if he gave the offer to feed on him by faith then, and they couldn't until the sacrament was instituted.
That would be
the most cruel thing in the world. That would mean like some of those people would die then without having the opportunity to take the sacrament and be saved.
How is that not just morning prayer?
Huh? How is what not morning
prayer?
Now that he's added the elements, right? So then now the Eucharist can't be apart from the actual Eucharistic service can't be apart from the body and bread, but you can still feed on him if it's impossible for you to get to communion. It's out there. The theological truth is out there that you can still feed on him and by faith.
I mean, that's what Christians do, though. That's mm-hmm. like that's one of the.
No, there's a difference. There's a difference between just the common faith in Jesus Christ and the actual feeding on him by the communion. What happens at communion when you actually partake of the bread and the wine in faith? You're eating his flesh and drinking his blood in a spiritual manner, right? So that doesn't happen at morning prayer. It happens at communion.
Yeah.
Now that Jesus has added the element,
right?
So now that's done. You can, if you can't go to communion though, you can do that spiritually by faith, by watching me have communion.
Yeah. Somehow that increases the sense of it not being awesome.
I mean, I won't consume. I can.
Yeah, maybe that's how it should be, where you just consecrate it and then look at it, and we'll all and just I'll look at
off
it.
I'll eat off camera, as well. I'll partake off camera after it's done.
Well, could we have parking lot communion, like when the weather warms up?
Yeah, I mean, there's some
a lot
some
of people.
Solutions.
Could we like do something, or?
Yeah, I mean, the one solution is to put a table outside, and I'll
it's snowing today, so this wouldn't be awesome.
And I'll pray the prayer of consecration, and then
People can drive by.
We could have little cups like the Presbyterians have, and
bottoms up,
and individual wafers laid out so that people don't touch. You know, like
yeah,
because yesterday we didn't have a bowl for John and Michael. We had a pattern laid out separately. So, yeah, there's things we could do. I mean, people could just come up individually from their cars, get the communion, go back into their car and drive off or whatever.
And drive away.
Yeah, yeah.
Something like that.
But there's some kind of thing you can buy, like a microphone to hook up so that people can tune in their car.
Oh, that's so you're not like having a big
silence while there are people watching,
or like a huge speaker in the parking lot.
No,
they blaring like
you can,
the service. Like
you can there's an FM transistor or something, so you can
everybody just
listen
tunes in.
Right from their cars.
That's cool.
Yeah,
we. I mean, I think a lot depends on how long this actually lasts,
right.
And that's very interesting. Well, I do. I guess. Part of it is that I have a great longing for corporate morning prayer, more than I did a month ago when I was seeing people. So maybe I'll just do my own Google Hangout of morning prayer. If people want to pray morning prayer with me, they should DM me or something, and I can set up.
Yeah.
Because I don't know. It's like... It's very interesting.
I mean, I could do morning prayer during the week. We could do that. We could just
yeah.
broadcast morning prayer service from the house. So it
would be... Yeah, we wouldn't want to go over there all the time. Yeah. Well, maybe. Depends on how much time we have, which we don't. We don't have time. I don't know where people have time to do all the stuff that, like, now that you're in quarantine, draw all these pictures or, like, build the house in your backyard. Or...
Well, but if you're used to going to a job 9 to 5 and you can't go to your job anymore. Then you have time.
You have
right?
time.
But
I don't have time.
But we don't have time, right?
I'm so stressed. Yeah. And our kids are like backed up on school because our quarter is ending today. And that's another interesting thing that I'm curious about, how this illness, this moment in time is going to change not just the church, but like education itself for children and college kids, like, and how it's going to change the workplace.
And I mean, if whether that could be good out, or bad. Well, businesses can figure out how to do most of their business online with workers at home. That's good for people's families. That's good for people's, and that's good for business, I think.
It could be if your family is functional.
Yeah.
What if your family is super dysfunctional? Then is that actually good, or is it good for people to get out of their houses? Like, I don't know the answer to that. Is it good for children to go somewhere else if their family is super dysfunctional? Go sit in a classroom somewhere with somebody who's more functional than their family? Or is it good for... Okay, let's take
the functional person, I think, is the functional, the basically functional family. It's better for the kids to be home, the father to be home, the mother to be home. And that way, they're not being... the kids aren't being indoctrinated by the state. Or they might be, but the parents here, if there's an online thing going on, the parents are right there. They know what's being taught. They're not... The influence of the parent becomes greater.
Which wouldn't be bad.
Which would not be bad, right.
Yeah. But if the family is dysfunctional, then they have no supports. Like, that's really scary. Right. I mean, I don't know. If you have
that's true.
A mental illness or emotional, big emotional problem, and you're stuck at home with your kids for 6 months right now, and you're in charge of their school and everything, what is there to help support when you're supposed to be in isolation? I feel like if this went on a long time, then some people would need to think about that.
Yeah.
Like, what kind of institutional supports could happen for people who aren't really equipped to be home with their families intensely? So I would be curious about how the church could help with that, but I don't have any ideas about that today. We have to take 1 week as it goes.
Mm-hmm. This is all new territory. And we did, I'm reading this book, which is probably not a good book to read during this time. The name of it is, I think I mentioned it last time, but, what is it? It is The Great Mortality, which is about the Black Death and how horrible it was. And often just it was a plague when it's bubonic form, it's not as deadly, but when it becomes pneumatic, airborne, then it hits you and you die within a day, more than likely, in a horrible, horrible way. And in some places there was a 60% of the population were wiped out, some places 30%, but it just swept through Europe and just killed everybody. And nobody knew about, people realized we need to get out of the town, we need to get out of the city, we need to go to the country. But the way the medical establishment tried to work through it was, okay, they believed at the time that the problem was poisoned air. The streams were emitting
miasma.
Yeah, bad air, and this was caused by the stars, the movement of the stars, because the moon causes tides to go and ebb and flow. So it must be that the astrological movements also determine the when the poison is going to be in the air. So the doctors were all kind of looking up in the sky.
Instead of in the body.
Yeah. And there's this thing called New Galenism, which Galen is the classic, the Greek doctor back in 300 BC or something like that, who wrote a classic work on medical care. But he was,
he didn't know how to do dissection.
Right.
He didn't know anything.
Well,
I mean, he knew a little bit.
Right. So during the in 14th century, there's kind of this rediscovery of classic works, and the medieval mind was enamored of authority. So Galen, because he was a classic author, knew, of course, more than anybody else. So you listen to what he says, even if your observation of reality differs from what Galen.
What are you going to believe? Your lying eyes?
Right, right, right. So it did not matter. There was no idea that we observe the process of a disease. We make theories about what we observe, or hypotheses about what we observe. We test those hypotheses and we come up with a theory. And then we work to resolve the problem. That just wasn't there. The scientific method
wasn't there.
Yeah. So it was that led up that increased the deaths. But again, you know, people look back. You guys see on Facebook, let's do what the church did during the plague.
Yeah, I saw that.
No.
A lot of people died because they went to church.
Yeah. Let's not do what the church did during the plague. I don't understand why that's the model. I mean, yeah, I understand that it was very brave. And priests
were very brave.
Should go in and care for their sick and dying patients. If that means they die, that's fine. But priests should probably not have during the Black Plague.
Big corporate gatherings.
Yes.
People breathing on each other.
Yes. Right. Because again, it's one thing to be willing to die for Christ. It's another thing to be able to kill for Christ.
To say, all y'all are going to die for Christ.
Right, right.
You're all going to die.
Right.
This time. Together we're going to die. I mean, you shouldn't rush headlong to death if you can avoid it. Right. That's not the Christian stance.
Right.
Your life is in God's hand. So you should avoid death as long as you can while preparing for the idea that you are going to die. And then trying not to be afraid of it. No,
or harm other people.
Right. You should try not to harm other people. So, yeah. Well, I feel like we've offered all the advice that we have.
Yeah. I feel so desolate today. It's hard to get.
I know. Excited. Probably there's like nothing to read or online that's not about this. So,
yeah.
Maybe we can. Well, next week, hopefully, we'll be more scintillating than we are today. But thank you for tuning in, and we'll be back next week.